From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. At the Oscars on Sunday, director Steven Soderbergh will be in the unusual position of having two films nominated for Best Picture, Traffic and Erin Brockovich. He also has two nominations for Best Director. On today's Fresh Air, Soderbergh discusses making Traffic. Competing with Soderbergh in the Best Director category is Ang Lee, who made Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Crouching Tiger is nominated for 10 Oscars, including Best Picture. We'll hear from Ang Lee and from one of the film's stars, Michelle Yeoh. Also, film critic Henry Sheehan reviews Enemy at the Gates. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. Russia announced today that it will expel 50 American diplomats in response to the Bush administration's decision to order 50 Russian diplomats out of the country. Leaders on both sides seem to be sending the message that they're ready to let the incident stop there. Secretary of State Colin Powell said he didn't think the expulsions would throw relations between the two countries into chaos, and Russian President Vladimir Putin said he didn't expect big consequences from the affair. Officials from the Bush administration said yesterday that some of the Russians were being expelled because of involvement with an FBI agent who's been accused of spying. They said others were being sent home because Russia has too many intelligence officers in the United States. China's senior foreign policy official has issued another warning about U.S. weapons sales to Taiwan. For the second time this week, Vice Premier Chen Qichen said that China would view U.S. sales of advanced weapons to Taiwan as an act of provocation. NPR's Vicky O'Hara reports.
The U.S. currently is considering Taiwan's request to buy Aegis destroyers equipped with advanced radar systems. China is opposed because the system would help Taiwan defend itself against a Chinese missile attack. Vice Premier Chen Qichen discussed the issue with the Bush administration this week in Washington. At a luncheon on Friday, sponsored by the U.S.-China Business Council and other groups, Qichen said there already is trouble in the Taiwan Strait. If you pour oil and fuel over this spark, he said, the spark would turn into a great flame. Qichen said China does not want to see the flame of war. U.S. officials say the Bush administration will decide on the arms sale based on Taiwan's legitimate defense needs. China has deployed some 300 missiles across from Taiwan and is increasing the number each year. Vicky O'Hara, NPR News, Washington.
Public opinion in Macedonia is deeply split over yesterday's killing of two ethnic Albanians by police in Tetovo. Jeff Bealey reports from Tetovo.
Ethnic Albanians claim the men were innocent civilians brutally gunned down by police. But ethnic Macedonians say that the two men were killed while attempting to attack a police checkpoint with hand grenades. Both sides say television footage capturing the whole incident supports their own point of view. Macedonians hotly dispute the Albanian claim that what appear to be grenades on television were only cell phones held by two taxi drivers. Now politicians have weighed in, with the president of Albania calling the shooting the murder of two Albanian civilians. Macedonia's largest ethnic Albanian party has similarly condemned the shooting. Macedonian authorities blocked an Albanian language newspaper today from circulating outside the country after the paper carried an account accusing the police of killing defenseless civilians. For NPR News, this is Jeff Bealey in Skopje.
In stocks today, the Dow gained 115 points or 1.2% to close at 9,505. This is NPR News. Authorities in El Cajon, California, say the high school senior accused in yesterday's school shooting will be arraigned next week. They identified the shooting suspect as 18-year-old Jason Hoffman. He's accused of wounding three schoolmates and two teachers before he was shot and wounded by a policeman at Granite Hills High School. Hoffman is listed in fair condition under intensive care at a local hospital. The World Wrestling Federation has bought out its competitor. The WWF purchased World Championship Wrestling from AOL Time Warner. Joshua Leves reports from member station WABE.
AOL Time Warner's Turner Broadcasting Systems has been trying to sell off World Championship Wrestling for months. The WCW's ratings have been declining, and last year it lost an estimated $80 million. In January, AOL Time Warner struck a deal with a New York-based company, but that fell through. Then officials turned their attention to an offer from the World Wrestling Federation. and on Friday, a purchase was officially announced. The two sides are keeping details secret, but WWF officials have announced some of their plans for World Championship Wrestling. They have planned to continue airing some WCW programs, and they may introduce cross-branded storylines, creating rivalries and possible alliances among the characters. For NPR News, I'm Joshua Leves in Atlanta.
President Bush said today that he supports a second term for Kofi Annan as UN Secretary General. The president met with Annan today at the White House, saying he looks forward to working with the Ghanaian diplomat in helping to keep the peace. Annan announced yesterday that he's planning to run for another five-year term when his current term expires this year. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Archer Daniels Middle & Company, makers of all-natural vitamin E, ADM, supermarket to the world, on the web at admworld.com.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Sunday night at the Oscars, director Steven Soderbergh will be competing against himself. He's nominated for Best Director for Aaron Brockovich and Traffic. Both are also nominated for Best Picture. This week, the drug-related issues raised by Traffic have been the focus of a Nightline series. Late last year, I spoke with Soderbergh about making Traffic. Traffic tells several interrelated stories that are each about the difficulties of controlling the drug trade. The stories revolve around drug enforcement agents trying to infiltrate a cartel, American drug dealers who are fighting among themselves, the Mexican police who are secretly involved with the drug trade, and the new American drug czar who is clueless about what he's really up against. Benicio del Toro has an Oscar nomination for his role as a Mexican cop. In this scene, he's just given inside information to American drug enforcement agents.
So now that you have what you want, let's talk about how I get what I want.
Oh, you don't have to worry about that. You're not going to have any problems there.
Yeah, but first let's talk about what precautions you're taking to protect yourself.
You worry about getting me what I want. I worry about myself.
Oh, yeah, Javier, you should feel good about this.
Feel like a traitor.
I asked director Steven Soderbergh about the challenges of telling several separate but connected stories at one time.
There are two concerns. One is that the tone be consistent from story to story, even though each of these three narratives take place in very different locations. You sort of need to feel like everyone's acting in the same movie, and there's 110 speaking parts in the film, and we are in the course of showing these three stories in seven different cities. But you at least want to feel like there's a consistency to the way everybody's behaving. And then on a technical level, I tried to differentiate the three stories by adopting very different visual palettes for each of them. The Mexico section of the film looks very, very different from what I call the East Coast section of the film, which looks very different from the San Diego portion of the film.
Describe some of those differences a little bit.
Well, Mexico is very sort of, we use these heavy, heavy tobacco filters and desaturated the film and increased the contrast. So it's very very blown out, very brown. San Diego has a very diffuse and sort of blossomy feel to it. The light is very hot but pleasing. And on the East Coast section of the story, we've gone for very, very cool tones, a lot of blues. And that way, as soon as you cut to one of the stories, before you've even seen a character, you know exactly where you are.
You said you use tobacco filters?
Yeah, those are still legal.
Oh, no, that's not what I meant. I mean, is it literally a tobacco filter that you're using over the lens?
Oh, that fits on a cigarette?
Yeah.
No, it's a piece of glass that basically is sort of brownish in hue.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
this is just film lingo that I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you said you wanted to make sure it looked like everybody was acting in the same movie. How do you do that?
You hope. You also try and cast well. And more than anything, you try and create an environment in which the performances can be as naturalistic as possible. And the film is done in a very documentary-like fashion. A lot of it was shot with available light and handheld cameras. We were moving very quickly. And I think that contributes to actors performing in a style that isn't inherently very theatrical. It isn't what you would typically see in a sort of large-scale movie with movie stars in it.
Is there a movie that you particularly admire that helped you think through how you wanted to make this movie with its multiple stories and multiple locations?
Well, there were several movies that I watched again and again to study their aesthetic. It could be something like The French Connection, which was a very good model for what we were trying to do. Or it might be a film like The Battle of Algiers, which was made in 1966, or Z, which was made in 1969. Both of them with a very, very strong documentary-like feeling. I mean, in the case of The Battle of Algiers, they literally had to put a title at the beginning of the film saying not one foot of this film is documentary footage, because some of it is so sort of shocking that it's hard to believe that it was staged.
Now, what are some of the things that you've done in Traffic to get a documentary look but to still have control over what is happening?
Well, it's kind of planned anarchy in a way. I wouldn't rehearse, and I usually had two cameras running simultaneously so that if some accident happened, I'd covered myself. And again, we weren't using very many lights at all. And I wasn't telling actors where they should go. I wasn't giving them marks to hit. And I was keeping the camera a little further away from them than normal and using a longer lens so that what I would call their acting space wasn't violated. And all of that contributes, I think, to a feeling that is much less traditional in again, a movie with this many name actors in it.
At the beginning of the movie, Michael Douglas's character is named the new drug czar, and there are scenes in the movie in which he's meeting with people from Congress and other experts, each of whom is pitching their point of view about what he needs to do to control the drug trade. In one of those scenes, there's several real congressmen in it.
Right.
Orrin Hatch is one of the people in that scene. Why did you go for some real people in that scene as opposed to just actors?
Well, again, it's all out of a desire to create a sense of verisimilitude and make you think that it's happening in front of you. And we had a sequence which, you know, we referred to as the Georgetown cocktail party. And so we went to Georgetown, and there was some scripted material we had, but we invited a fairly good number of senators and congressmen to join us. And didn't discriminate about who we invited. We just did a blanket mailing, really. And when they showed up, I basically brought them over to Michael Douglas and said, he's the new drug czar. I want you to discuss your point of view on the drug war, what's happening in your area, and how you think he should navigate Washington. And I had three cameras running in this case, and it was all improvised and then edited down to what I hoped was a manageable length. But I don't think there's any faking that. I mean, you see Orrin Hatch telling Michael Douglas, the new drug czar, what he thinks he ought to be doing, and there's a feeling to that I don't think you can cheat.
Tell me this, though. You know, you're watching that scene and you're thinking, that's the real Orrin Hatch saying what he would say to the real drug czar, but that's Michael Douglas playing the drug czar. And you know, do you think the audience can ever quite forget that it's Michael Douglas?
No, probably not.
I guess what I'm asking is it difficult to have someone who's, you know, a real movie star in a sequence that's meant to have a documentary realistic feel to it because he is what he is, a movie star?
I think you can in this instance, or at least I hope you can, for a couple of reasons. One, Michael is a terrific actor and also is someone who I think is perfect for portraying a man like this, who is put into this situation. And then again, the way in which the film is made, the style of it, I think helps blend all of it so that Michael and, for instance, Orrin Hatch do seem to be occupying the same world. And so it didn't, I thought it blended pretty well. And there are a couple of other instances in the film where we're using real people portraying themselves. For instance, when Michael is given the tour of the border in San Ysidro between the U.S. and Mexico, and when he's allowed into the El Paso Intelligence Center in El Paso, the people giving him the tour there and talking to him and answering his questions are the real people.
Now, the scenes in Mexico are subtitled. In
right.
earlier Hollywood films, they would have been in English but with a Mexican accent. Tell me how you thought through the idea of actually doing it in Spanish with subtitles, and if you fear that that means that the movie's going to play art houses instead of, you know, shopping mall cineplexes.
Well, there were two reasons for having the Mexican sequences be in Spanish. The first is that I didn't think you could get anybody to take you seriously if you had Mexican characters speaking to other Mexican characters with accented English. And since we were trying to make a film that purported to be up to the minute and sort of reality based, I just never considered that you would do anything but allow them to speak in Spanish. And the other important aspect of that is it's very crucial that you understand that the way Mexicans speak to Mexicans is different than the way Mexicans speak to Americans. And the Benicio del Toro character, who plays a Tijuana state policeman, has a lot of interaction with American characters in the film. And the way that he relates to them is very, very complicated, and you need to understand that, you know, the impenetrability of another culture moving in both directions in this case. And so I just felt that was the way to go, and wasn't really concerned that that it would be a problem for people. And the fact that we have the cast that we have, I wasn't really concerned that we would be sort of considered an art house movie.
Steven Soderbergh recorded in December. He has two Oscar nominations for Best Director for Traffic and Aaron Brockovich. Each film was also nominated for Best Picture. Coming up, Ang Lee, who's nominated for Best Director for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. This is Fresh Air. The Oscars are Sunday night. Ang Lee is nominated for Best Director for his film Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. The film was also nominated for Best Picture. Lee's other movies include The Ice Storm, Sense and Sensibility, and Eat, Drink, Man, Woman. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is set in ancient China and blends Buddhist principles and martial arts. The fights defy the laws of gravity as the warriors climb walls, fly, and face off on treetop branches. The film is a fable about an unruly, aristocratic teenage girl who's secretly a martial arts prodigy. She flees her arranged marriage to live a warrior's life, taking with her a stolen weapon, a beautiful jade sword. Two highly skilled warriors, played by Chow Yun-fat and Michelle Yeoh, try to recover the sword and save the girl. A little later, we'll hear from Michelle Yeoh, who starred in many martial arts films. I asked Ang Lee why he built so many fight scenes around women.
Well, I love to do them, I guess. Well, it was in the book. I guess I'm not a macho guy myself. Over the years, I found doing especially strong women that really speak really for me. I found I really enjoy doing them. They're very effective to me, and I get attracted to those characters both in real life and in drama. So anytime I see that kind of character, that attracts me right away.
The fight choreographer that you use in Crouching Tiger is Yuen Woping, who has done a lot of martial arts films, and he also did the choreography for The Matrix. Were there things that you asked him to do that he said to you, sorry, that's not possible?
A lot of soft stuff. like soft weapons, things that tie with a rope, or weapons that would bend to hit around people. That kind of weapon he doesn't like, because it's very time consuming. With at the same time, with the hard weapons and sticks like that, you can do so much more, and there's a lot more collisions. Because usually collisions generate a lot of excitement. But I want to do the Wudang style, the sort of Tai Chi style. That's just too soft for him. So sometimes he said that doesn't look good.
What is the Wudang style?
It used to be believed, at least in movies, the Shaolin style is like a hard kind of style that's similar to karate and taekwondo. That's a lot of movies have seen that. The Wudang style is more soft, inner strength kind of style. It's hard to see. I'm more into that. And that doesn't always look good on film, so sometimes he will reject that. I think a lot of stuff I wanted to do, he would do it grudgingly, like too many wire works. That's time-consuming. He likes to fight on the ground.
Well, I'm going to stop you there. You say he likes to fight on the ground. You have scenes where characters basically fly from the ground onto a rooftop, or like walk up a wall in the middle of a fight, or fight on the tops of trees.
Yes.
I guess the choreographer, that would come into the category of what the choreographer didn't like to do.
No, he he's my hero since I was a film student. He made the movie that made Jackie Chan. He made the movie that made Jet Li. He's an all-time hero.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, he's just one of my great heroes. But he's not known for good wire work. He didn't like, he liked ground fight. He's not with styles and classic Chinese fighting stance. And he's also coming from Peking opera background. So he liked choreography, but when it's up air, people are up in the air, it's physics, it's something else.
So when they're up in the air, you're working with wires that suspend them and can pull them up, kind of like when Peter Pan flies across the theater.
Right, with cranes or posts or whatever you can hook the wires on.
Why did you want some of the fights to be in the air or to be on the top of trees?
It's airborne. It's metaphorically gravity-defying. In the drama, there's a lot of social restraints. I'm depicting repressed classic Chinese society with woman's story. I just think, on the other hand, when it gets to the fight, the exhilarating visual effects of flying the air, which is a great tradition from the novels and the movie genre, I just feel like using them as metaphorically and cinematically a power. I think it's very effective to me. I just like to do it on the film.
Could you describe what was happening on the ground when two of your characters are having a fight on the treetops?
On the ground? Oh, what happened on the ground?
Yeah.
Some 20, 30 people pulling them from each every direction. Hours to set up. We, in the bamboo forest, was in the southern part of China. Bamboo forest the size of maybe Connecticut. And they're always in the valleys, the bamboo groves. So it's hard to find a road, which we did find one to park those 5-6 big construction cranes. So the wires were set up, cables and wires were set up there. According to what I see might happen on the bamboo, then they set it up, takes hours and hours, then trying out. Basically, a whole bunch of people pulling different cables and wires that are attached to the harness that hang the actors, and they just pull each in different directions and try to manipulate what might happen and according to the fighting and the bamboo suspense.
So
it's very light, bouncy kind of effort, but by a lot of people.
And then when the scene is completed, you like digitally erase the wire from the
yes,
screen image.
Yeah. Which is a pain in the neck because there's a lot of foregrounds for the bamboo leaves. Anything soft is difficult
mm-hmm.
to do.
Right.
And the cloth, too, to erase the wires from the cloth. That's flapping. That's difficult.
In an interview with Time magazine, you said that you worked nonstop on that movie for 8 months and that you were miserable. You said, near the end, I could hardly breathe. I thought I was about to have a stroke. I'm resting now, trying to get fit again. But since I'm middle-aged, I'll probably never come back to normal. Now, this was in December of 1999.
This is all true.
How do you feel now?
I'm still adjusting, going back to my health. Actually, the worst times when I came back doing the editing, that was the worst time, when I totally feel like the 70s, according to the early 70s, that was the backlash of the 60s. That's how it felt when it finally hits home. So my body was kind of malfunctioning. I was really depressed, but I was under a lot of pressure to get the full movie out for the Cannes Film Festival. And there's so many cutting to do, music and especially special effects, like 400 shots of them. They all jam into that 4 or 5 months. So I was in terrible shape. I'm pretty much getting back, except there's still a little tendonitis on my feet.
What? Why tendonitis?
I don't know. It's kind of a body malfunction.
Did that connect to making the movie?
Yeah, it's funny. Tendonitis, I went to the doctor. When I came back, his first thing, he said, are you under long time of stress? I said, what's that? He said, oh, it has everything to do with stress. And also, I probably, for the location scouting, up and down the mountain too many times, and standing 16, 20 hours constantly, I think that all adds up. Plus, I'm middle-aged.
Ang Lee recorded late last year. He's nominated for an Oscar for directing Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which is also nominated for Best Picture. We'll hear from the film's star, Michelle Yeoh, in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by this and other NPR member stations, by Barnes & Noble Booksellers and the Discover Great New Writers Program, which features the literary voices of tomorrow today. Information available at Barnes & Noble stores and on the web at www.bn.com. And from Wilmington Trust, a wealth management company providing investment and trust services to individuals, families, and corporations nationwide for nearly 100 years. This is NPR, National Public Radio. Coming up, we talk with martial arts film star Michelle Yeoh, who kicks, hits, blocks, and performs stunts while suspended by wires in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. The film is up for 10 Oscars. And Henry Sheehan reviews the new movie, Enemy at the Gates.
Thank you.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Michelle Yeoh is one of the stars of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which is nominated for 10 Oscars, including Best Picture. She starred in many Asian martial arts films. She co-starred with Jackie Chan in Super Cop and was the heroine of the James Bond movie Tomorrow Never Dies. She grew up in Malaysia. In her fight sequences in Crouching Tiger, she defies gravity and flies. As director Ang Lee described, this required suspending her by wires. I asked her what it's like to work with wires.
Hard, painful. Because basically what happens is you're in this corset. If you have a 24-inch waist, by the time you remove the corset, it would be down to 18 inches. Basically, you can't breathe. There is limited mobility. And you are not in total control. You have to work very hard to keep your back upright and your whole body looking very graceful. At the same time, there are four or five guys on the other end of the wire who's pulling you up and down. So you work with very, very subtle feelings of movement. When they pull, you have to know when to go with them, when you have to work against the wire and with the wires. So by the end of like a 15-minute session, you really need to come down because your legs get numb, you know, your ribs are hurting. And it's very hard work.
You say you have to work hard to keep your back upright, to keep your posture. Mm-hmm. You have beautiful posture, and I'm sure that has something to do with studying ballet when you were young.
Oh, absolutely. I totally give credit to that because it's given me that very graceful, very expansive kind of movement, which I have been able to incorporate it into my martial arts, whereby when you watch us fight, it's more balletic and lyrical rather than being very short and aggressive. It's explosive. But at the same time, it's that grace is very necessary. I think that is the major difference when you watch a woman fight and when you watch a man fight.
With that sense of grace?
Yes.
You studied ballet in England at the Royal
That's
Academy
right.
of Dance.
Mm-hmm.
But I
studied ballet since I was like 4 years old. I think I always wanted to be a ballerina. And when I went on to England, in fact, that was my dream to have my own ballet school back in Malaysia. And I did a degree in dance and minored in drama as well. But I didn't go on to that. I went on into acting instead.
No, I think you had an injury that made it necessary for you to give up dance.
That's right. I had a back injury while I was doing ballet. And that, instead of being able to pursue a professional side of ballet, I went back to college, university. And that's when I went to do choreography and contemporary and other things instead.
How is it possible to do all the fighting in martial arts films with whatever injury you sustained yet not be able to do ballet?
I don't know. Actually, that's a very good question. No, when I was doing ballet, we used to dance from like 9 o'clock. You know, it was a full-time course. So, and a lot of ballerinas, you will find that, you know, they put their body through absolute hell. I figure with an action movie, you only do it in short spurts of time, like, you know, for a couple of weeks and then you have a break. So you're not intensively banging the body in that way. I think my specialist, if he ever saw any of the films that I did, would be very shocked. Because he told me, you know, you can't do any of these strenuous things that's going to hurt your back. And if you saw me rolling off cars, you know, jumping off high buildings and kicking around like that, I think he would be very, very taken aback.
Good point. Why don't you describe what was one of your most risky and strenuous stunts?
That would definitely be in Super Cop, a movie that I did with Jackie Chan. That's the big difference when you do a contemporary movie like Super Cop and then Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. In a contemporary film, you not only do arm-to-arm combat, but also stunts are much more important in that sense. And I think the craziest one that I ever did was to take a bike. A motorcycle and jump onto a moving train. And the worst is I'd learned how to ride a motorbike, probably about 3 weeks prior to that. Today, if you ask me to ride a motorbike, I can go, but I don't know how to stop. I always jump off the bike.
Now, let me say, what you were doing in the stunt, you were driving, you know, from the ground on this motorcycle.
Yes, up a ramp.
Up a ramp, and to on the roof of a moving train.
That's right.
And
yes.
The outtakes of this are at the end of Super Cop, at least they are on the video version. And
yes.
We see that the first time you tried it, you fell off the
bouncing.
Train. What
yes.
did you bounce onto? Not the concrete, I hope.
Oh, no. If it was the concrete, I wouldn't be sitting here today.
That's what I thought.
No, we have, what happens is on the other side of the train, we line it with cardboard boxes. So if you are, when we used to do, I think at that time, I was really very blessed in the sense that I was surrounded by lucky stars. Looking back at some of the stunts, especially in that film, I could have been so seriously hurt. When I bounced onto those cardboard boxes, I could have bounced 5 feet further away and I would have missed the cardboard boxes and landed on the tracks on the other side. So, you know, when I was dubbing that film, that was when I sort of went, what was I thinking at that time?
Why do your own stunts? You know, in most American movies, the actors have stunt people to be their surrogate in scenes like the ones you've described.
When I first went into action films, actually it was my second movie that we did that, the reason being is like the decision was to do or not to do, because in Hong Kong you have people like, you know, Sammo Hung, Jackie Chan, Jet Li, and they were so established because they did their own stunts. The Asian audiences are spoiled in that sense that they know and they will only regard you as doing your job properly if you do your own stunts. And I think I had a bigger challenge to prove at that time because, you know, in the 80s when I first went into action films, there had not been a female action star, so to speak. So we had to convince the audience, first of all, that a woman was capable of doing something like that. And the only way you could convince them was to show them, you know, without any doubling. But then I was very lucky because when I first started out doing martial arts, I had the cooperation of the stunt people in Hong Kong. I guess when they first started out, they were very curious to see, you know, this girl. She doesn't seem to realize what she's letting herself in for. And then when they found out that I could pick up movements that they were throwing at me, then they got more interested into teaching me how to focus and how to extend the punch that looks... There is full contact, I must tell you, when we fight in a
film.
No,
really? There is?
Oh, yes.
Such full? Thing. You'd be breaking each other's noses and jaws every day if there was complete contact.
No, when it comes to the faces, obviously, yes. Even sometimes when we kick the stunt double in the jaw, there is full contact. What we can do is instead of wearing leather shoes, which is too hard, then we would sort of pad the top of the foot or, you know, use rubber shoes so that it's softer. But when I smack them across the face or the neck, there is not a touch. There is the actual impact on it. And I have knocked out my stunt boys doing that before. So when we are fighting with each other, you know, when we're hitting each other on the arms or we're kicking each other on the around the body, there is impact. But when you fight with someone who is very experienced, they know on impact to absorb and know how to react to it.
Well, how do you absorb impact? Because I'm sure you're hit too, right?
You learn, this comes with experience, honestly. The first few times when I did it, it was just sheer taking the punches. And then after that, you learn that it's timing as well. And this is something that, you know, it doesn't come overnight. If you're lucky and you're working with someone whose rhythm is in sync with you, then it's much easier. If not, then, you know, both of you are just going, kung, 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 you know, just belting at each other the whole time. When you can, upon just the impact of it and you move together with that punch or that kick, then you can absorb and take away, you know, the direct hit. But then when there is no hit, you as an audience will be able to see it very, very clearly.
My guest is Michelle Yeoh. She stars in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which is nominated for 10 Academy Awards. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our interview with Michelle Yeoh, star of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. It's nominated for 10 Academy Awards. In your new movie, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, the choreographer is Yuen Wo Ping, who is one of the famous Asian martial arts films choreographers. Mm-hmm. Would you take one of those scenes where, you know, say like three people are coming at you at the same time and you disable them with a couple of kicks and jumps? Mm-hmm. How are you going to rehearse that scene? Are you going to do it over and over again until everybody knows what they're doing? And the first times, do you do it without really connecting just to make sure you've got more or less
You're good. Have you done this before? You've got the right drift. That is what happens. First of all, the stunt coordinators, you know, Yuen Wo Ping and his right-hand men would work out and see what are the movements they think would look good for the camera or that situation. And then afterwards, what happens is the two leads will do it with each a stunt coordinator so that, you know, it's not the two leads having it, working it out together because, you know, the stunt coordinators know exactly what they're doing. So then these two separate teams will come together. And then when I'm doing it with my co-lead, the one I'm fighting with, first of all, we do it slowly. We run through the movements that we know until we know exactly what we're doing without contact, with gentle contact, you know, just so we touch. We know, okay, duck, go under, kick, smack, bang, react. So this is what we do. So in your mind, that's practice, that's rehearsing. And then when we shoot, that's when we have to go into it. So prior to shooting, it's just going through the movements because you do not want to expend your energy as well. Remember, when you're doing a shoot, for us, the normal shooting hours are 12 to 15 hours. And if you're doing an action sequence, you would be fighting the entire day. And every shot needs 110% from you. So when you're rehearsing, you try as best not to dispense that full energy. You do it halfway as you get more sort of used to the movements. And then, because there is speed, you don't do it park, park, park. You know, you have to go tung, 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 tung. So it's that rhythm that happens during the shoot.
You know, sometimes even a good actor will forget a line and need to be prompted. If you forget a move, you're really sunk.
It is less dangerous when you're not using weapons. Because I'll tell you, when you're fighting arm-to-arm combat, the biggest mistake someone can do is like if you're supposed to be punching them across the face left to right and they suddenly blank out and they react right to left, that's when accidents happen. The biggest problem is when you use weapons, because when you hit at someone, It was like, for example, in this movie, it was very intimidating for the new girl because this was her first action film. And when I attack her, I don't have a smile on my face going, okay, watch out left, watch out right. I'm really going with that very intense and very fast movements. And at the beginning, of course, I too am worried that what if I make a mistake and I hit her on the wrong side, or she makes a mistake and she puts her head in the wrong way. Because at the end of these spears that we use, even though they are not sharpened, you know, to be cutting, it's still metal. And if I was to jab in there, she would be spewing blood all over the place. So there is that risk factor. That's why if you are fit and you are trained, your reaction, your reflexes are a lot faster. And also, when we fight, we don't react before the punch is thrown. We only react after the punch is thrown. So you literally watch where the punch is going. So in case that person goes the wrong way, you're not going to be the idiot that goes with it. So it's just practice and being very, very aware of yourself and who you are fighting with.
In your new movie, Crouching Tiger, you tore a knee ligament during, I think, the early phase of the shooting.
Yes.
And you had some surgery, recovered for about 3 weeks, and then you were back in the film again. How did you manage to do that?
I think it was sheer discipline, gritting my teeth. I'd waited a year and a half to do Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon when Ang Lee first approached me after I just finished Tomorrow Never Dies. And he said to me, I want to do Sense and Sensibility with martial arts. And I, at that moment, said, yes, fine. And I'm a great admirer of his work, and I knew that working with Ang, I would be taken to another level. I would learn very much from him about acting, about our film business. So when that accident happened, it was in the first action sequence, actually the last night of that that big fight scene that we had. Fortunately, it was the last night. And fortunately, also, in this movie, right from the word go, I had only two fight sequences, one at the beginning and one at the end. So there was a big change around in the scheduling where they had to allocate that final sequence until the last 10 days. I was very, very fortunate to have the care and attention of Dr. Andy Cascaria from Johns Hopkins and also the physiotherapist Diane Dallop over there in Baltimore, because without their looking after, I would not have been able to get back to the set. When we first discovered that, yes, there was, because I was in self-denial when I had the fall, and I thought, I just sprained my knee, you know, after 3 days, I will be fine, I'll be jumping, I'll be running. But you know, because when I turn right, my leg would go left, that something was not right. So I was there with Dr. Cascaria. He did the MRI. I think he could see in my face that, you know, I wanted him to say, no, you're fine, don't worry, get back on your set. He had to give me the bad news, and following, I had to give the bad news to Ang. And from day one, Ang had always said to me, you are my warrior in this movie. And I knew how devastated he would be, and so was I. But he said the thing that really kept me going. He said, don't worry about it, you know, make sure your knee gets back into fit condition, because your health is the most important thing, and then we will wait for you. Because I would have been so devastated if he had, you know, to replace me and get someone else to do this part that I had been wanting to do for so long. So after surgery, Dr. Cascaria had said to me, if I was willing to go into a very intense rehab program, you know, professional footballers go back into a professional game by the end of 3 months. So it was possible that I could do that, you know, barring there were no complications and I was willing to put up with the pain and aggravation and all that. So that was what I did, gritted my teeth and knew that I wanted to be back in China filming with my crew. So I spent 3 weeks out here doing rehab and then going back to China.
How's the knee now?
It's not 100%. I guess it will never be 100%, because, you know, I think also consciously, mentally, you always think, oh, there is an injury. So you're always more aware of it. It's coming along. I still have to do therapy for it.
Crouching Tiger really shows off your acting abilities as well as your fighting abilities. Do you have any inclination to get out of martial arts films and do more straight dramatic films?
No. I, you know, as an actress, I want the balance of being able to do both. I do love action films. And, you know, and this is where I've always worked so hard to get to, is where there should be a balance in an action film, whereby the dramatic element is just as important as the action. And Ang has proven to us very clearly in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon that it can be done, that the action doesn't need to overwhelm the dramatic, you know, the beauty about the emotional side, the stories that can be told. Personally, for myself, I've just started my own production company with partners, Media Asia in Hong Kong, and I in fact, my first production will be an action adventure. So the question that you asked me, will I move away from action films? No, I really do enjoy making them. But then I will have the balance of doing non-action films because I do understand that the body needs a rest sometimes.
Right. Well, Michelle Yeoh, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Terry.
Michelle Yeoh stars in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which is nominated for 10 Academy Awards. Our conversation was recorded late last year. Coming up, film critic Henry Sheehan reviews Enemy at the Gates. This is Fresh Air. The new epic, Enemy at the Gates, is based on a real event that took place at the Siege of Stalingrad during World War II. Film critic Henry Sheehan says it also casts a sympathetic eye toward our former Cold War enemy, Russia.
Enemy at the Gates takes place during the Battle of Stalingrad, a turning point of the Second World War. From September 1942 to February 1943, over 2 million Russians and Germans died in a struggle over whether the Nazi race across Russian soil would continue or the invaders be driven back to Germany. The movie opens with epic panoramas of the cataclysmic battle and then narrows down to a series of Western-style ambushes and shootouts. On the Russian side, a young shepherd from the Urals, Vasily Zaitsev, has been picking off Germans with such frequency that the Nazi high command orders in their own aristocratic sharpshooter, a Baron Koenig, to take him out. In between the gunfire, Vasily discovers a love interest in the form of a beautiful young Jewish intellectual who has remained in the ruins of her hometown to fight the Nazis. All in all, pretty standard fare of no particular distinction, competent rather than inspired. But there's a subplot on which the movie makes a bid for importance. One reason the Germans are so anxious to kill Vasily is that he's become a national hero. An idealistic commissar, Danilov, has decided that Vasily's exploits are just the thing to buck up a demoralized Russian soldiery and nation. Here, Danilov, played by a moony Joseph Fiennes, tries to persuade party boss Nikita Khrushchev, played by Bob Hoskins, to go along with the propaganda scheme.
Here, the men's only choice is between German bullets and ours. But there's another way. The way of courage. The way of love of the motherland. We must publish the army newspaper again. We must tell magnificent stories, stories that exalt sacrifice, bravery. We must make them believe in a victory. We must give them hope, pride, a desire to fight. Yes. We need to make examples. But examples to follow. What we need are heroes.
But Enemy at the Gates isn't just about propaganda. It's a propaganda film itself, calculated to replace some old national stereotypes with more current models. Take, for example, the portrait of Koenig, the German marksman brought in to kill Vasily. He's played by cool, reserved Ed Harris as a world-weary pro who disdains Nazi regalia. He is a professional soldier, an enemy we can respect, even as we hiss. Vasily, on the other hand, is an unadulterated hero. Played by handsome Jude Law, Vasily is simple, patriotic, and sensitive. It's hard to reconcile sensitivity with a large body count, so the filmmakers, French director Jean-Jacques Annaud and his co-writer Alain Godard, are careful about what killings they show. After we see Vasily pick off a quartet of German officers, including a fat and thus particularly unlikable one, that's pretty much it. The succession of killings that make him famous are simply never shown. Only Khrushchev among the Russians is allowed to be crude and bloodthirsty. Danilov, the commissar, is racked by doubts as the movie goes on. The Battle of Stalingrad unlocks a conscience that was apparently undisturbed through the purges and forced collectivization of the 1930s. In other words, the Russian people have always been terrific. It was only the communists that led them astray. Since the communists are gone, or like Danilov, converted, we can treat them like humans. All those victories the Russians paid such a high price to win during World War II can finally be acknowledged now that they have political leadership approved by the West. We've seen this political about-face in American films. The anti-German movies of the 1940s gave way to films in the 1950s that explicitly drew a line between the German people, who had become our allies against the Russians, and their Nazi overlords. The Russian people were so demonized for so long that they need a similarly thorough propaganda fix. Enemy at the Gates, with its English cast, French writer-directors, and German financing, isn't really a very good movie, but it does make a nice greeting card for Western Europe's new trading partners.
Henry Sheehan is film critic for the Orange County Register. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced by Phyllis Myers, Monique Nazareth, Amy Sallet, and Anne-Marie Baldonado, with Megan Howell and Patty Leswing. Our researcher is Jessica Chu. I'm Terry Gross. We'll close with an excerpt of Hans Zimmer's Oscar-nominated score from the film Gladiator.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and from Random House Incorporated's Bantam Books Division, publisher of Folly, a novel by Laurie R. King, the author of A Darker Place. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, the great alto saxophonist Jackie McLean talks about his life in music and the things he learned from Charlie Parker, Bud Powell, Charles Mingus, and Art Blakey. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.